Bang It Live with Rita Steele on 95BFM.
Yeah.
Good evening, Rita.
Kia ora, how are you guys?
And a big kia ora to you, and we are well, and that's our speech, pretty much.
Same as until you get a holiday.
Yeah, I don't know, I'm in a weird zone. I'm like, do I want to have a big holiday, or do I just want a little holiday and then get right back to this climate emergency?
Well, I mean, what could you do in 2 weeks to help the climate emergency? Don't
what
do anything?
Can you do
nothing less.
Just yeah, probably nothing, to be honest.
Just eat veggies and grass?
Well, you know, you can still eat. Anything that costs money is probably contributing in some way, shape or form.
What the heck are we talking about this week, actually, Rita? Are we pretty much on?
We are going to, hopefully, if technology plays ball, we're going to listen to a small excerpt from the UN chief, Antonio Guterres, speech that he did at a BBC special event on the environment called Save the Planet.
Okay, now this is a minute of a more of like an 11-minute speech, but we've got the 1 minute here straight from the BBC.
Yes, we've got some of the best bits.
All right, here we go. I'm going in.
Let's face facts. The state of our planet is broken. Humanity is waging war on nature. This is suicidal. Nature always strikes back and is doing so with gathering force and fury. Biodiversity is collapsing, deserts are spreading, oceans are choking with plastic waste. In 30 years, there will be more plastic in the ocean than fish. The central objective of the United Nations for 2021 is to build a truly global coalition for carbon neutrality. Every country, city, financial institution, and company should adopt plans for transitions to net zero emissions by 2050 and take decisive action now to put themselves on the right path, which means cutting global emissions by 45% by 2030 compared with 2010 levels.
What's the likelihood of the big players doing this, Rita? Can we, like, if America and China do it, will the rest kind of follow? Would you think?
I don't know. And that's what I wanted to talk about today, because it's sort of like, you know, you've got one of the leading political figures of the world, the UN chief.
Can I actually just say, heaps of this speech has a real Star Wars vibe about it. He was like...
Does it?
Yeah, he was talking about the Force. He was talking about the nature striking back.
Good point.
Very stylish.
I mean, yeah, some of those, you know, terms are really in your face. Like, you know, we're waging war on nature and this is suicidal. Like, that's a pretty clear directive, you know, that the science is there. There's not much more. There's not many more ways we can say that we need to do something. Yet all of us are paralyzed, like, and not really doing anything. I mean, there might be a small handful of people that, you know, have shut up shop and moved, you know, moved away from society and live a net carbon zero life. There might be some of us who have tried to, you know, make some changes here and there. But, you know, and we've talked about it before, you know, why is it that we don't seem capable of actually really making any real inroads when it comes to such a stark threat to our existence.
Feel like it has a lot to do with the fact that we live for about 100 years.
Yeah, so I did some digging. So that's what I wanted to chat to you guys about. And, you know, obviously, well, to me, and then, you know, there's something to do with, you know, living a short period of time. Mm. But still, we have children and grandchildren, and we don't want any harm to come of them. But sort of dug around, and psychologists and neuroscientists have worked together in collaboration and they've done some work on, you know, the brain scans while they're talking to people. And there's some really interesting research that's come out of this. And I'm not a psychologist or a neuroscientist, so I really can't speak to it in any major detail. But I found it quite interesting. They were sort of saying that climate change as a concept simply does not compute to us. Like, we are not designed to understand slow-moving threats.
So no, we're more about immediate threats to our smaller community, right?
Yeah, well, they said that our brain is a get-out-of-the-road machine.
Right, yeah.
So, and that's why we can duck a ball really quickly. Like, that's what we've kind of evolved
to
be.
It's the content of our dreams as well. We basically dream about dumb little things that we need to improve on to protect our tribe, really.
Yeah, but
that doesn't really overarchingly seem to reach to our environment in a larger sort of global sense for some reason. I don't know.
No, and you look, when you look at, you know, other civilizations that have failed, and arguably, you know, they've done so because the ecosystem around them has collapsed. So it's not like we haven't had this warning multiple times by other, you know, by those civilizations that came before us. You know, this is, so there's every, you know, thing is pointing at a kind of catastrophic collapse, and yet we're all like, doo, doo, doo.
Yeah.
You know, it was really interesting seeing the way that we responded to COVID, and really interesting at why some societies have been able to deal a bit better than others. And like you say, that smaller thing might have been in our favour. We probably are a little bit more like a village in New Zealand, where we genuinely have gone, oh, you know, I don't want my family and friends dying from this. Whereas maybe in a bigger society, it's easier to say, oh, this won't affect me. So yeah, there's some really interesting psychology around climate change when I started digging into it. The other one that I found quite interesting was that they did a study and they played some speeches to a bunch of people, and they some of the speeches talked about climate change, and then they played the same speeches and removed that and used the words air pollution, and they found that people were more receptive to the air pollution speeches because that was a visible, relatable thing that was strongly connected to dirtiness and health implications, poor health.
So we need to rebrand. I haven't heard a lot about acid rain in recent years, and everyone got fairly worried about that.
Totally. And I guess that's one of the reasons why scientists maybe talk about, like, sea level rises. And I've always found that kind of odd, because sea level rises is kind of one of the last impacts. Like, you have all these other things that come before a sea level rise. A sea level rise, by the time we notice it, it's noticeable in any major way.
But we can.
Too late. Yes, but we can see it and we can measure it. So I guess it's one of those things that that is slightly easier for us to kind of get our simple brains around.
What I don't understand is why the whole brand isn't just like just a living cleanly in general. Like, if we don't have the pleasure, or should I say disgust, of like rolling into LA and having a look at the smog, or rolling into Hong Kong and seeing what the skyline looks like, why isn't there just an overarching emphasis on just cleaning that up? Like, just, hey, this is all caused by cars, look, and then we just figure out how to not do this, you know? Like, how come that isn't just like the normal thing of, instead of going, are we affecting the climate, yes or no, you know, are we speeding up climate change, whatever, it's just got to be better to live cleaner no matter what. Like, I don't care what your argument is, it's got to be better, right? So
the unfortunate thing about living a less environmentally impactful life is that there's a lot of things that we enjoy that are actually really bad for the environment. Mm-hmm. So being able to just go to your local liquor store and grab a box of beers, you know, like, there's so many, you know, impacts of that. And sure, you can brew your own, and that would be a much more, have a smaller climate footprint and environmental footprint. But it means that you had to have thought about wanting beer 6 weeks ago. And it means that you need to, like, have the money up front to buy all the brewing gear. And, you know, so there's all these kind of other hurdles that make you just go, I'm just going to buy beer. Well, you know what, maybe one day I'll do that. Like, that's kind of, I think, you know, what we end up doing. And then also there's that technology thing, right, where we go, we can fix this with technology. We've fixed everything else with technology. So we can fix it with technology. So here, take some money, researchers, and find a solution. And the unfortunate thing...
It needs to be a combination, doesn't it, really, obviously?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can't just hope and pray that they'll come up with a solution. I think that we need to do something in the meantime, and if they do come up with a solution, then awesome, that's some, you know, then maybe we can go back to some of these polluting ways, I guess. But, the issue with climate change is that it is actually, it's the first, second, third, one of the rules of physics. So again, somebody that's into physics can check that though. But the rule of thermodynamics: you just cannot put in more energy into the atmosphere and not expect it to heat up. And there's not many ways that we can spin that without trying to break what is a fundamental law. So technology might help us tinker with some of the things we're doing, but overall there's an issue. And just so it doesn't seem so scary, you know, we're talking about probably living a standard of life that they had in sort of the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
So we're scaling back, but we're not going back to sticks and stones and living in caves, which is where people go with their mind, I think.
But that is potentially what might happen if everything goes totally tits up.
100%. Like, for us at the moment, it's a choice. We get to choose how we do this future and cut the things that are silly and actually redesign the things that are silly so that they still work for us, versus having nature just enforce something upon us.
I think if we did go back to sticks and stones, plenty of us, probably myself included, would vanish from the face of the earth because we don't have any of those skills to survive in that environment.
I would kill you for sure. I'd just kill and take and then I'd just have to go and live in the wild.
Yeah, well, we would definitely be back to raping, pillaging and blundering people, wouldn't we? Because, you know, that's like, we look back on, you know, those early civilizations with a little bit of, oh, you know, those people did awful things, but they did it because they were starving, you know? Like,
are we the generation, serious question here, are we the generation that if humanity gets through this, like this era, are people going to look at us like racists, you know, like of that, with that same kind of disdain?
I think so.
You know what I mean?
I think so. I think about whenever I use something that's got plastic in it, and there's more of that in my life than ever because I have children. I can't believe how much stuff comes with plastic. And I think about it and I think, well, you know, I really genuinely feel like they will be...
We're an embarrassment,
40,
aren't we? Yeah.
But yeah, thinking like, I can't believe that they used to just use this as packaging or whatever. You know, I do think that there will be that feeling towards, maybe not just us. I think this kind of, we've got a lot of resources at the moment.
Industrial humanity, really, I guess.
So, Rita, we're kind of looping back to the same point as, you know, like we always get back to.
Let's get old mate on the island on the phone.
Well, it seems like as a society, we're too stupid. We can't make good decisions. As manufacturers and consumers, we need the government to step in and go, hey guys,
Idiocracy.
Stop doing that, stop doing this, stop doing that.
We need a little bit of 1984 and a little bit of...
Yeah, it's funny because I wrote that in my notes. I was like, it does seem a little bit Big Brother and sort of social engineering, you know, it does feel a little bit like that. But you're right, like we don't, like, well, actually now it looks like we're actually incapable of making some of these decisions because of how we've evolved. So, you know, I think collectively, you know, we're signalling that this stuff is important to us, but you're right, there's probably some decisions that are not going to be very popular. I mean, one of the things that the UN Chief Antonio Guterres has suggested is shifting the tax burden from income to pollution and carbon, which is a great idea. Like, if you just overnight said everything that's got... You know, like actually start charging tax on the environmental impact of a product, and then took away our income tax. That changes everything because all of a sudden you've got spending power to make some good decisions about what you're actually buying, rather than just buying something. Because at the moment, some of the worst polluting products are the cheapest. So, you know, if we could somehow fix that, I think that would help a lot too.
Yeah, there's heaps of. It's a pickle. I don't know, man.
It's not a simple one, and I guess that's the point of this topic. And it was this week's show is that, you know, even with the greatest minds in the world and the most political of political figures telling us that we are on a path of existential suicide, basically, we still can't. And we're not, like, don't feel bad about it because it's not in our evolutionary, like, capacity.
We have a chance, though, to do it kind of on our own terms in a sense, but I think what potentially is going to happen is we're going to be forced to do some really crazy shit when water starts drying up and things like that, and it's not going to be pretty. It's not going to be pretty, is it?
No, it's not. So, you know, we either, like you say, we either choose to do it or we have Mother Nature choose for us. And historically, Mother Nature has not been very kind.
We may have had a scientist text in.
Seaweed is going to save us, Rita.
The first law of thermodynamics states that energy can never be created or destroyed. If we apply that to the issue of climate change, then it's entirely conceivable we could take over abundant energy from the atmosphere and store it in another way, in another place, i.e. carbon stored in farmed seaweed, for example. I have actually seen a little bit of that going on, yes.
I'll have a look at it.
Okay, Rita. Well, thank you very much for your time, as per.
No worries. You guys have a great week.
Right on.
We'll call you next Monday, and we might see you on Thursday for a little end-of-year drink up here.
Sounds good. See you guys.
See you, mate.
That was Sustaining Alive on 95 BFM.